We are beginning the book of Ruth. Thank you. I think we'll manage. Our story begins with the Holocaust. Yes. So, a few years ago, there was a story about a shul where people heard that someone davening in shul with them was a convert from Germany. And then they heard that the convert from Germany was the son of an SS man. And suddenly, people didn't want to sit next to him. And the person started having trouble.
The son of?
Yeah. His father was an SS man. And he converted to Judaism. So people didn't want to sit next to him in shul. That's not right. So I commented to a rabbi. I said, I'm shocked that Jews don't know the halacha, that if a person converted, even if he's from Amalek, we welcome him, we love him, we have a mitzvah to be kind to him. And so the rabbi said to me, let me tell you a story. Many years ago, he was visiting Israel with his wife, and they went to the great synagogue. He was davening downstairs, and his wife went upstairs. And when they finished davening, so his wife comes down and another lady comes down with her. And he sees that that lady is holding a Siddur in German. So being that he came from a family of Holocaust survivors, he asked this older lady, he says, do you mind if I ask you, where are you from? Gentlemen, quick question. Who was Hitler's general in North Africa?
Rommel.
Thank you.
Who?
Rommel. So she says, who are you? He says, I'm visiting. I don't live in Israel right now. So she says, okay, if you don't live around here, I could tell you the story. My father is Rama.
But if I remember it, he was not really an SSR.
Right.
He was
wasn't a good dude.
Well?
No, he was, in those days, you have to be a member of the party, otherwise you couldn't make a career. It's quite simple, especially in the military.
One of the history books says that when they started conquering areas of North Africa, his soldiers said, Hitler said to set up concentration camps here. And Rommel said, if Hitler wants concentration camps here, he can come here and set them up himself. That's the quote in one of the history books, that he wasn't willing to partake of this.
And he also let the Jewish community didn't touch them.
Right. So so she converted. Somehow she made it out and converted, and she was living here in Jerusalem, and she kept it as a secret because she was scared that if people knew where she was from, just as had happened, I was telling this rabbi what had happened 8-9 years ago here in Jerusalem. Someone's father or grandfather was an SS man and the person converted. What do you want from the person? They did nothing wrong. And he said to me, well, Rommel's daughter doesn't want anyone to know that she's living in Jerusalem, keeping Torah and mitzvot. I'm telling you the story now because I think the odds of her being around, I don't think are too high. You know, she must be in her 90s or 100s by now if she's still around. I doubt she's still going to the great synagogue with a German siddur. But the story is an important one. We learn here in Machon Meir and all around us, we have people who are converting to Judaism. I remember approximately 20 years ago, I was visiting Israel then, maybe a little more than 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, and I went to a store in the old city, and there was a woman working there, and as she went to the back room, the store owner said to me, she's a Gioret. I said, what? He said to me, yeah, she converted. Her name is Ruth. I was so amazed, I ran to a payphone and I called my parents. I said, you won't believe what I just saw. I saw a convert. It's the first time in my life. It's exciting. I saw a person who decided to convert to Judaism. We take it for granted here at Machon Meir, right? There are a dime a dozen here. You see him all the time, but it's not. It shouldn't be taken for granted. The Book of Ruth teaches us about potential. That a person who comes from the archenemy of the Jewish people, a person who comes from a family that runs away from kindness, a person who comes from a family that turns their back on Abraham, who took them and took good care of them, a person who comes from a family of incest, where Lot sleeps with his daughters, a person like that can be the matriarch of David HaMelech and the whole Davidic dynasty. The story of Ruth is about the ability of man to be great, irrespective of who man's parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, who, what nation one comes from. That's not what's going to define a person. What's going to define a person is at the times of hardship, at the times where it is most natural to think only of oneself, how much can one think of others? How great can one be? And our story begins with classroom. Teacher walks into the classroom and says, I want to teach you a lesson for your whole lives. And he takes out a large piece of canvas, puts it on the board, and takes out a paintbrush, dips it in black ink, touches the paintbrush in the middle of the canvas, and there's a big black dot. And then the teacher starts making circles around the canvas. And the circles get bigger and bigger, and as the teacher continues painting the circles, the paintbrush starts running out of ink. Until the teacher is reaching the outer parts of the canvas, and there are wisps of black going on the canvas, and then the teacher puts down the paintbrush. The teacher looks at the canvas and says, tell me, where do you see the most light? So the students start pointing to the corners of the canvas, which are still white. The teacher says, tell me, where do you see the least light? So the students all point to the center dot. So everyone agrees the least amount of light is where? Everyone points to the center dot that's dark black. The teacher then flicks a switch, and behind that black dot turns on a light bulb. And the teacher says, now where do you see the least light? So all the students go, what's the big deal? What'd you just show us? The teacher says, no, I want you to remember this lesson for the rest of your life. Because what you called light, when you looked at the white part of the paper, you did not see light. You saw the reflection of light. When you looked at the black part of the paper, you did not see light. You saw the absence of reflection of light. The only time you really saw light was when I turned on that light bulb behind the black dot. Then you saw light. Now that black dot is your life. We walk through life and we reflect light. People tell us you're great. People tell us you're wonderful. People tell us how nice we are and how good we are. And we reflect the positive energies that we receive. And then there comes a point in our life when we're that black dot. No one's saying anything good about us. Suddenly we have to deal with life where people say we're pretty lousy. Suddenly we have to deal with life where no external light is giving us light. And at that moment we have to decide, will I turn on my own light? Will I be a source of light? Most of life it's easy. We can reflect the positive. We connect to the people who think positively of us. We reflect their light. We create. We go to communities where we create relationships where it's easy, like-minded people. They look positively upon us. But there are moments in life where you're going to be doing what's right. You're going to be doing what's exactly right and no one else will. And they will make you feel like you're that black dot. And you have to decide at those moments whether you could turn on that light within you, whether you could really be a source of light, not just a reflection of light. Those are the moments that make us great. Those are the moments of the story of Ruth and the story of David. David HaMelech, from the time he was conceived, people were questioning how his mother got pregnant. David will go through much of his life with people murmuring behind his back that he is a mamzer, what's called in English a bastard. People, including his own family, question his legitimacy. And so David has to contend with that. The story of Ruth is the story of a woman who had everything to lose, and at that point it seemed like she had nothing to gain by converting to Judaism. The only thing she had to gain, and I say only with quotation marks, was the connection to the truth, to the source of life. When Ruth is challenged with the question, should I convert or not? Ruth is under the understanding, and at that point it was the correct understanding, that no legitimate Jewish man will marry her. Conversion means to live the life of a spinter, to live the life where people are looking down at her as the Moabite, the convert who's illegitimate, the convert from the enemies. And Ruth has to make the move, knowing full well, as far as she understood, that she has no gains, no practical, tangible gains. She has to connect to what she believes is the truth. Here we begin the story of Ruth. Our sages say the focus of this story is not halacha. When we read the Megillah, here and there we learn halachot. That's not the purpose of writing the story. The purpose of the story is about kindness, chesed, what it means to be kind. And we should notice that kindness is being taught from a non-Jew. Kindness is being taught from a relationship of a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law. Kindness is being taught from the leader of Israel, who takes time to notice a girl who is immodest, a girl who has joined the Jewish people and tries to be modest, but doesn't notice that all the other girls are with the female harvesters, and she suddenly feels comfortable with the men. She doesn't notice that. And the leader of Israel tries to hint to her, stick with my female workers. And she says, I'll stick with the guys. And she doesn't even notice the hint he tells her. So she has tremendous traits, and yet she lacks certain sensitivities. But Boaz sees the greatness that's in her. We can always harp on what's missing in someone. It's not only about someone else's light, it's about our ability to give light. So we begin the story of Shoftim. You guys are invited to get your own copies. I'll wait a minute. It's a good idea. We'll do it with the text. Okay? We'll begin. Vayehi. Was a difficult time in Jewish history.
Where is it in Shoftim?
It is not in Shoftim. It is a separate book, Megillat Rut.
Oh,
Megillat Rut. It's its own sefer. Bimei Shefot HaShoftim. It was a time when people were judging their judges and saying, you have no right to be a leader of Israel. You're not honest. You're not fair. You can't tell me to give something to someone else. You yourself are dishonest and inappropriate. Vayehi ra'av ba'aretz. So there was a famine in the land of Israel because the people were not living the moral life they should be living. What time period are we? So we know we left Mitzrayim in the year 2448. We spend 40 years in the desert. We have another 14 years under Yoshua. And then we enter the period of judges. So we have Osniel ben Kenaz, Shamgar ben Anat. We have evolved in the period of judges to the point of approximately 150 to 200 years after leaving Mitzrayim. So we're holding approximately the year 2650. Okay? Somewhere in that vicinity. And this is towards the end of the period of judges. There's no central leadership. And there's a famine in the land of Israel. The leader at this point is not Boaz. Vayelech Ish. The wealthy person who could fund everyone else, who was constantly asked for donations, left. Mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. He left from being the house of bread for Judea. His house was the house of bread. Everyone would come knocking to him for bread. He left that position. He didn't like the idea that he was constantly giving his wealth to other people. Who can blame him? Who would want to give so much food to other people? Ah, but wait a second. What's our job? What's the job of a leader? The message of the Book of Ruth is that the job of a leader is to give. The job of a leader is to be dedicated. And he left. He left the position of giving. And it's very hard to give and give and give. Mordechai becomes the great leader of the Jewish people because he gives and gives and gives, and he doesn't leave Esther. Every day he shows up again and again and again because he knows that what Esther can get, no one but him can give her. In life, the challenging thing is to be consistent. How much can you give? Why is marriage hard? Because you got to keep giving. I can be nice to you. I meet you once a week, twice a week. It's fine. But after an hour or two or a day or two, I go back to my cave. You go back to your cave. That's fine. You want us to share caves? For how long? You want us to share bank accounts? Now it's getting personal. So it's difficult. The greatness of a person is often measured in their ability to consistently give. To give short term, to give one time, that's easier. To constantly give, to constantly be patient, that's much harder. And so Elimelech breaks where I think most of us would break. It's very easy to understand Elimelech. You can be kind, you can be giving. At some point, you get sick and tired of it. No. We have to realize that's where we're tested. If we can give, we have to continue giving. Life is about giving. Obviously, there's the imein ani li mili. If I don't take care of myself, who will? But obviously, if the Torah holds Elimelech accountable, that means that Elimelech could have given. Elimelech preferred not to give, but he could have afforded to continue giving. And Elimelech is given the name Elimelech. We're not sure what his real name was. The Megillah calls him Elimelech to tell us who he thought he was. Eli Melech, to me, Eli, to me, Melech will come the kingship. Elimelech thought he was going to be the great leader of the Jewish people. And the Megillah shows us why he would not be the leader of the Jewish people. Because it's not about his wealth, it's about his ability to give. And he faltered. He was not able to consistently give. He was a big tzaddik. He could have been different. He made a mistake. Ruth continues to give to the point of her shoes. She has no shoes when she comes back to Israel. She comes back barefoot, impoverished. Leave, Ruth, go back home. Your father's a prince, a king. You could be so wealthy. Why would you do this? No, Ruth keeps giving. And that's why Ruth can be the source of King David. Elimelech turns his back on the people. He says, I'll just go to live a little bit in the Moabite fields. Lagur. How many people go to Chutzlarts thinking, I'm just going Lagur. I'm just going there for a short bit. So, his wife disagrees, but she doesn't put her foot down. He says, we gotta go. His kids, they go. And he's the head of the house, so they go with him. His wife is pregnant. His wife is so sought after, the average person doesn't know what she looks like. When she goes on the street, there are so many chariots around her. There's so many coverings and silk and honor and glory that only her good friends know what she looks like. She is the wealthy woman of Judea. So Elimelech thinks he's supposed to be the king of Israel. He's so wealthy. And he goes out to Moabite territory and he discovers that the Moabites are not so moral. So he tells his family, we can't live in the city of Moab. Let's go live in the fields. He's a pious person. So they go and they live in the fields. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech. So this man's name, his reputation, his actions, his capacity was to be the man who would have the kingship. V'shem ishto Naomi. His wife's name was Pleasant. V'shem shnei vanav. His son's names were, we're not sure, but the Megillah gives them names, again, which refer to what they're going to, their lives are going to be like. Machlon will be forgiven. Vechilion, and will be eradicated. Ephratim, men of importance, princes. Mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. They come from the city of kings, the city of Beit Lechem in Yehuda. Vayavo Sedei Moav Vayiyusham. And they came to the fields of Moab, and then they settled there. People go to Chutzarts, they think, I'm coming back, I'm just going for a time. And they were there. And they were there. And they were there. Vayamot Elimelech ish Naomi. So they come out there, they have cattle, they have assets, they have businesses. And even though they went to an area where there was no famine, theoretically, their businesses should have prospered. One by one, they close down their businesses, and then they lose their donkeys, and then they lose their camels, and then they lose their sheep, and then they lose their oxen, and slowly but surely, they're losing their wealth, and they don't get the hint, which is one of the difficulties in life. It's not so easy to get the hints in life. And there's a story of a man who came to Rav Kook and he said, I have a prospering business in Russia. I was wondering where I should invest. And Rav Kook said to him, so move your family to Israel. And the man said, I didn't ask that. And Rav Kook said, so move your family to Israel. And the man tried asking Rav Kook the questions he had, and Rav Kook said, look, I'm telling you, you can come one way or another. I say move your family to Israel. Let me tell you a story of a student in Machon Meir. There was a student who learned here and got married here and then said, I have to go make a living in Chutzarts, and his wife begged him not to go. And he said, I'm going. And she said, I'm not coming. And then he came in to one of the rabbis who teach here, and the rabbi said to him, you belong in Israel, and I want you to come back alive and not in a casket. Don't leave. And the guy said, Rabbi, I'm not asking you, I'm leaving. And he said to him, you will have to come back, and I don't want you to come back in a casket. Do me a favor, don't leave. And the guy left, and within 5 years was back in a casket. I don't know if it was even 3 years before he came back. He didn't give his wife a get. He didn't give her a divorce. He left. His wife told him, you shouldn't leave. We'll make it work here. He wouldn't listen. She begged him to stay. He wouldn't listen. He said, I'll buy you a ticket. She said, no. We agreed we're building a life here. I didn't agree with her. I personally said, if your husband says he has to go, go with him and bring him back. But go with him. Don't. She wouldn't budge. He came back in a casket. So the story goes with Rav Kook that the man in Russia told the story that then he thought he had all these booming businesses, and then there was the Russian Revolution. He lost everything. He lost his whole family, and then he made Aliyah without everything. And then he said, boy, now I understand what Rav Kook was saying when he said, just come here. The story of Ruth on one level is teaching us not to turn our backs on the land of Israel. Elimelech turns his back, and so his businesses all start failing one after another, and he's not listening. He doesn't get the message. And then finally, he himself dies. And the pasuk describes it as Vayamot Elimelech Ish Naomi. Elimelech, the man of Naomi, died. And the pasuk is telling us many messages with this pasuk. One message is, no one senses the pain of the loss of a person as their spouse. When Elimelech dies, it's as though he was only the husband of Naomi. Wait a second, he left two orphans. No. No one senses it like the spouse. So that's one message. The other message is, Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, the pasuk is pointing a finger at Naomi. Naomi, what's your excuse now? Your husband died. Why didn't you come back? She remains. But notice, she never gave birth to the child she was pregnant with. She left Israel and miscarried. She remained with her two sons, but the wealth was gone. Yes?
We're saying all these stories about living in the land of Israel, which is very important and very true. But I'm saying, it makes it sound like everybody goes to Chutz Laaretz, it's just going to be obliterated.
When a person can stay in Israel and they leave because they think they're going to make a lot of money by leaving, so the Megillah is not giving us a positive outlook at that. The Megillah is not saying that no one should leave Israel. There are circumstances where a person has to go. But the Megillah is saying that when people leave and they could stay, when people leave and they could have made it work, so then they have to realize that this is why Elimelech died. Our tradition is that Elimelech was a young, fit man. He didn't have to die at this point. And the next step is another classic. He's dead. Vayisul lahem nashim moaviyot. His sons marry Moabite girls. So they have a reputation. They're princes who came from Israel. Even though their stocks are down and their assets are down, the Moabite king is willing to give them the hands of his daughters for marriage. So they're marrying princesses. They're marrying two women who are quite extraordinary. Shema Chatopa. One is called the nape of the neck. The Shema Shenitrut. Another one's called Beautiful Song. So they live there for 10 years, no children. Hey guys, you're married, why don't you have kids? Maybe God's telling you something. Nothing. So after their father dies, they intermarry. One of the great threats of living in Chutz Laaretz is intermarriage. People don't like to recognize that threat.
They did convert.
Okay, we'll find out in a minute. So they also die. Forgiveness and obliteration. Machlon and Chilion, they both die. And now Naomi remains, and she doesn't have the money to buy the basic clothing to bury her children with. So these two daughters-in-law, who were princesses, they take from whatever they have and they fund the burial and the proper clothing for their husbands. And now Elimelech and his two sons, it seems, are buried somewhere in the fields of Moab. It's Pesach. And they have nothing to eat. Forget matzah. They have no shoes to wear. They are so poor that they've got nothing, and even though it's Yom Tov, Naomi tells them, it's Pikuach Nefesh. We have no food. Vatashov Misedei Moav. Let's go back. Kishamea Bisedei Moav. Because when she was in Moab, the merchants told her, she heard, Kifakad Adonai Etamo Latet Lahem Lachem. Hashem's nation, they have food. Naomi left because she didn't want to give them her food, right? Or Elimelech didn't want to give his food. Well, now, 11 years, 12 years have passed, and the tables are turned. She doesn't have any food, and the people of Israel do. She left as a wealthy woman. Now, she's impoverished to the point where she has no bread. And she has to come back to her people, who now have food.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
how is it that these two princesses would have stayed with them until that point?
Because they were pious. That's what we're going to see now.
Orpah was pious?
Yes. Vatetay. So Naomi leaves. And although the book's being thrown at them, we have to remember that they were very pious people. We read it, and we are supposed to take lesson from their mistakes. But in the overall picture, they were better than any one of us. Much better than any one of us. These were giants of Jewish history. These were great people. Their fatal flaw is what brought them down. We have much more than one fatal flaw, every one of us. So when we read the story, although we're supposed to notice the fatal flaw, we're supposed to notice where they were wrong. We have to remember that Elimelech was a big tzaddik if there was a thought that he could be the next king of Israel. Naomi is a huge tzaddiket if we know her name, and we're going to learn a lot from her. So Naomi is a giant person. Yes, she made a mistake. We have to learn from that mistake, so we discuss that mistake. But as an overall picture, she was a tzaddiket. And that's why the pasuk reiterates she left. To tell us that when Naomi left Moab, all the Moabites sensed that Moab was a different place. I remember when Mordechai Eliyahu passed away. You felt it. Jerusalem wasn't the same Jerusalem. Hasn't been ever since. When he was here, you felt like, oh, there's someone special here. He's not here. Okay. Ah, there are other special people. Right. There are others, but he's not. I always felt that the massacre at Merkaz Arav happened after Rav Avram Shapiro passed away. When he was alive, he was Rosh Yeshiva, the yeshiva. Didn't happen. How can, you know, shortly after, you had the massacre there. I always felt that you can't ignore that. So she left. Min ha-makom asher hayeta shama. She left that place that she was there, and everyone else suddenly sensed it. U'shtei chaloteha ima. And her two daughters-in-law went with her. And that is greatness. These princesses know that they could go back home to their wealth. And they don't. They go with her. They walked barefoot on the path. They're going back to the land of monotheism. Naomi tells her two daughters-in-law, Lech nashovna. Go back, Isha Haleveti Ma. Go back to your nations. You never really converted. We didn't have a proper court here. So my sons did something with you, but you were children, you weren't adults at the time. And so now you have a choice. You don't have to accept Judaism at this point. You can go back to your nations. Yas Adonai Machem Chesed. May Hashem do kindness unto you. Just as you did with the deceased, you took care of them, and you did with me. Technically, I owe you your dowry. I owe you all the money that's written in your marriage contract. And you know I don't have anything, and you're forgiving me. You've been so kind to me. Hashem should repay you. Yitein Adonai lachem. I bless you. Hashem should give you. Umtzeena menucha. You should each find tranquility. Isha beit isha. Every woman in her husband's house. That's the blessing a woman wants. To find tranquility. To know that her husband loves her. To know that she has a peaceful home. To know that she has a good home. She gives them that blessing. Vatisha aklahein. She gives them a kiss to depart. Vatisena kolan vativkena. And they all start crying together. Vatomar nala. They answer her in unison. Kitach nashuv la'meich. No. We're going back with you. We're converting to Judaism. Vatomer Naomi shov navenotai lamatelach na'imi. Naomi says, my girls, go back. Why would you come with me? You think I still have more kids? You're going to marry them? I'm too old to get remarried. כי אמרתי יש לי תקווה גם הייתי הלילה לאיש וגם ילדתי בנים. Even if I thought there was a chance I could get remarried, even if there was a chance I'd get remarried tonight and I'd have kids, הלהן תסבר. Now, you want to wait for them? You want to say, oh, we'll stay in the family and the brothers will remarry us? עד אשר יגדלו. You want to wait till they grow old? הלהן תאגנה. Are you going to wait around just for them? Hold yourself back from building homes? לבלתי היות לאיש. And hold yourself back from marrying anyone? על בנותיי. Don't do that, my girls. כי מלי מאוד מכם. Because I want you to know, more than I cry over me, I cry over you. That's greatness. The average person, when they're having a difficult time, they don't even know anyone else exists. If they're a great person, then they could sense that someone else is in pain too. Naomi senses someone else's pain more than her own. She says, I'm more bitter over you than me, but they're not Jewish. But she says, Ki yatze avi yad Adonai, Hashem's punished me. You didn't do anything wrong. It's Hashem's hand against me that created all of this. So they cried some more. And now, after this whole speech, the one who turns her back, the one who's the back of the neck, she kisses her mother-in-law goodbye. And the one who's all song, she clung on to Naomi. Can you really blame Orpah? It's a tough question.
It's not about that, it's what she did after.
Okay. People fall in life.
You're dating classes, you have red lines.
Deserves a class in its own right.
We don't view it as disgusting as I thought we viewed it.
Is it her fault?
Or do we say like, ah, people.
I don't want to open it up. I didn't say that. I want to address it in a broader way. And with the remaining 3 minutes, I don't see that I'll be able to. So please remind me on Thursday night. We'll begin with that. What happened? What did Orpah do that night that she left? Why did Orpah become the mother of Goliath and 4 other major enemies of the Jewish people? How did this happen? So Orpah became a witch. Orpah became, no, literally, she became a sorcerer. She became a lot of interesting things. And she will try to kill David HaMelech later on. She will lose her children to David and his men, right? David will kill Goliath. David will kill her other children. But how did she go from being this kind, great woman who almost made it to being the other person? So that's a question we have to discuss. And this goes back to what Aviel asked earlier tonight. Do we always say that if someone fell, then that undoes everything they did in the beginning? And I think the answer is no.
Here is no.
I think it always, almost always is no. Sometimes you say the person was a hypocrite all along. But sometimes you say they were great and they fell. And Chazal tell us, this is what we will discuss with Zachem on Thursday, that when a person converts to Judaism, they have hardships that other people don't have. This is where we have to begin, Bezrat Hashem, on Thursday night. I don't think it's fair to look at Orpah and say, at this moment, she was a terrible person. I don't think so.
Right.
She fell. And Chazal say that there's potential for a fall, and we have to be aware of that and considerate of that, and that's why we have a responsibility to help a person not fall that way. But that, Bezrat Hashem, we will pick up with on Thursday night. And at this point, Orpah turns, Rus stays with Naomi, and Naomi will try to convince Rus that she better go back because she has a wealthy family to return to. Why should she suffer with Naomi? And the good part of her story is about to begin. Meaning, until now, we began the story with the tragedies. The tragedies of Elimelech, the tragedy of Naomi, the tragedy of Mahlon and Chilion, the tragedy of intermarriage, the tragedy of leaving Israel and turning their back on the people. But now they're coming back. And this is really where the story begins. Where Rus is going to be challenged Do I do this? What's in it for me? Not much. I'm going to lose. I'm going to be looked down upon. So why do I do it? And this is where we'll pick up Ezra Hashem on Thursday night.